Good morning. On today's programme, the cost of going back to school at a refugee camp in Cameroon, and how Marseille is dealing with the problems caused by too many tourists. But first we go to the United States, and every year on September 1st, the streets of Boston are lined with piles of discarded furniture as thousands of university students move house, all on the same day. 13,000 units change hands in the space of just 24 hours. It's known as Moving Day, or locally, as Alston Christmas, as Alice Hutton reports.
Every year in September, something strange happens in Boston. For 24 hours, Christmas comes early. But instead of the streets being filled with peace on earth, they are loaded with discarded furniture, dumpster divers, broken glass, and people in Santa Claus outfits. Because this is Alston Christmas, Boston's quirky annual moving day. It's an institution that baffles newcomers. The idea that in a 21st century democracy, there's one day a year to move seems strange and impractical. It dates back at least 40 years, when landlords moved en masse to September the 1st leases to attract the biggest economic block of renters, 250,000 students attending more than 50 colleges in the area, including Harvard and MIT in nearby Cambridge. Now, starting university is a rite of passage, but in no other place in the country do 36,000 students and tens of thousands of townies, making up 70% of the whole rental market, have to do it on the same day. On the stroke of midnight on August the 31st, nearly 15,000 homes change hands. In the days beforehand, the TV news warns of what's to come as if it's a rocket launch. T-minus 5 days to Alston Christmas, this is not a drill. On the day itself, people treat it like a video game. Desperate for the secret shortcut, renting storage pods and hotel rooms weeks in advance to avoid the rush. But no matter how many signs the city puts up, every year someone takes their U-Haul truck under the low Storrow Drive bridge and loses the roof. It's called getting Storrowed. Standing on Commonwealth Avenue in the student neighbourhood of Alston, from which the day gets its name, my ears are hammered by the sound of dozens of car horns as U-Hauls driven by hapless parents fill the horizon. "Get out of our spot! We got a permit!" shrieks one red-faced mother of a first-year college student from Wisconsin. He stands there looking embarrassed as all around, harassed families compete in the Olympics of Freshers' Week. Traffic is famously so impenetrable on this day that some people even make their own heat maps based on where 3,000 parking permits have been issued. And to add to the chaos, rocketing rental prices have made competition even worse this year. Boston is an expensive city, frequently ranking the third highest after New York and San Francisco. The current median rent for a one-bed is $2,057, up 10% from last year. Which is probably why the world's most expensive game of musical chairs is followed by the world's biggest scavenger hunt. "You can furnish your whole place for free," pants one red-faced 20-year-old from New Jersey, eyes bulging as he heaves a wardrobe out of a truck. "Just don't take any soft furnishings. You'll get bedbugs." Whilst many Bostonians view moving day with a strangely proud indulgence, laughing at the junk, bedlam and costumes, there's a dark side. On top of the 500% increase in rubbish, the money spent by the city on its removal, the extra staff, accidents and injuries, the piles of sometimes barely used furniture from affluent students paying up to $80,000 a year in tuition fees signal the inequality between town and gown. In an alley behind Cambridge Street, one woman in her 50s quietly picks through rubbish. Around 78% of Boston evictions are in communities of colour. A little while later, I join a group of cheerful students doing a little Christmas shopping in the last of the sticky New England summer heat. "Heads up!" yells a voice above us as a three-seater leather sofa falls from a first-floor balcony and bounces into the road, missing us by metres. "My bad!" shrugs the man. No one even flinches. This is Alice Hutton for World Report.
Next, another and very different story about the return of students to education, this time in Africa and to Cameroon, where the rising cost of living is having a direct impact on the provision of school supplies for thousands of children in the far north of the country. The Cameroon government, the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR and other partners usually offer school kits to refugees, but this year they've had to cut back on school materials due to increasing costs. For World Report, Dorcas Ekupe travelled to a camp in the north of the country and spoke with refugees and officials.
Cameroon's new academic year starts next week, but many parents are still racking their brains about how to provide the back-to-school supplies for their children. Parents in the Minawao refugee camp in far north Cameroon, that is home to over 70,000 Nigerian refugees, are no exception. The camp has 13 schools, including 6 nurseries, 6 primaries and 1 secondary school. Both refugees and Cameroonian teachers give lessons there. Many families have about 7 to 10 children. Most of the refugees do not have jobs and rely on goodwill gestures. They tell me life is tough, especially during this period of school resumption, as the prices of nearly every item in the market have skyrocketed. Hassana Amina, mother of 7, says her daughter is going into an examination year, but she remains worried because she doesn't have the money to buy the much-needed textbooks. Hassana adds that she has bought a few pens and exercise books. As days go by, this 35-year-old woman says she will try to buy more books for her children. Another refugee, Fatima Bintu, raises almost the same complaint as Hassana Amina, as she says sustaining her children will be an uphill task this year. This mother of 5 adds that the last time she was in the market, prices had drastically gone up, and this has discouraged her from going to the market. Habiba, another woman I met, says she does not have enough money to buy foodstuffs because of the price hikes. She further tells me that her children will have to reduce the portion sizes they take to school. 12-year-old Fatima tells World Report that though back to school is around the corner, she is still in need of many school items, so she has to sell with her mom to raise some cash. Another young refugee I met is 18-year-old Jamilatu. She has dreams of becoming a medical doctor. Jamilatu says going to school is exciting, but the lack of textbooks still stands as a huge obstacle, and Jamilatu is very worried about how she will study with no books. Though not finding life easy, the Nigerian refugees in the Minawao refugee camp have had to look for ways of survival so as to make ends meet. Huria, who is doing just that, sells cereals such as black-eyed peas, groundnuts and soybeans. She is grateful for life and says the proceeds from her business will help her buy more needed materials for her children. Jamdudu says usually during back-to-school period, grains like corn, rice and millet are in abundance in her house as she allows her children eat a lot, but this year that is not the case. This Nigerian refugee tells me that she and her family will have to make do with the little they have. Ismaila Tuku on his part goes to the farm, picks up firewood and sells for 100 CFA francs, which is about 20 cents, to earn some extra cash. Isaac Lucas, a Nigerian refugee and an instructor in the camp, says most parents, even at this stage, still find it difficult to purchase pens. The refugees are, however, grateful for the assistance offered to them by partners and donors such as the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, Plan International Cameroon, and the Cameroon government, as they usually help put some books in the library, offer school kits and give them some food. These partners have, however, reduced the number of items in the school kits, partly because of the rising cost of school supplies. The refugees are pleading for more assistance as they believe more still needs to be done so that they can have a successful and smooth academic year. Isaac, who is also a parent, says he has struggled to save some money. The savings helped him buy school accessories such as shoes and school bags. Not all refugee parents are as fortunate like him. Many families say they can't afford to feed properly, talk less of buying shoes. Neba Pascal, a Cameroonian teacher at the Minawal refugee camp, says school kits usually given to pupils and students have been curtailed, and so not all children will benefit from the package. With the academic year still starting, the Nigerian refugees at the Minawal refugee camp are pleading for help, as they say it will go a long way to help them to also give their children quality education. For World Report, this is Dorcas Ekupe in the Minawal refugee camp in the far north of Cameroon.
Finally, we go to France and Marseille, parts of which have become so popular with tourists that local authorities have introduced a permit system to reduce the number of visitors there. Concerns have also been raised about pollution being emitted by cruise ships docking in Marseille, with the city's mayor campaigning for change. From Marseille, Mary Fitzgerald reports.
Marseille is having a moment. After struggling for decades to shrug off its negative French Connection image, France's second city has recently become a popular tourism destination. Visitors are drawn to Marseille's lively cosmopolitanism, its vibrant food scene, and its Mediterranean coastline. The increase in tourist numbers has boosted the local economy, but many here now worry about the longer-term impact. Their concerns relate to two main challenges: air pollution as a result of cruise ships that dock in the city's port, and overcrowding in some of its natural beauty spots, chief among them, the Calanque. As a Marseille resident, there are few things I like better than a trip to the Calanque, a series of rugged inlets that line the coast between our city and the town of Cassis. Summer wouldn't be summer without regular dips in the dreamy coves of this, the only national park in Europe to include land, sea, and urban areas. With the cooler months allowing for long hikes along its cliffs, the 20-kilometer-long Calanques are one of the year-round joys of living in Marseille. But in recent years, the Calanques have become so over-touristed during high season that this summer, local authorities introduced a permit system for two inlets in an effort to reduce the number of visitors. Management at the Calanque National Park warned that the two, including the stunning Sergiton, an Instagram favorite, had fallen victim to very serious soil erosion due to overcrowding. This phenomenon is threatening the landscapes and biodiversity that we love so much, it said. Access has been limited to 400 people daily until late August. The hope is that by slashing daily visitor numbers, which had previously reached a high of 3,000, the area's delicate ecosystem can regenerate itself. It's the first measure of its kind for a French national park. Other efforts to protect the Calanque include banning unauthorized boats from mooring along its coastline and limiting parking spaces. In recent years, desperate park managers even resorted to posting pictures of its crowded beaches on social media to discourage visitors. Marseille has also been part of a regional initiative in which drivers using a popular navigational app receive messages encouraging them to visit less crowded alternate locations. Since 2020, Marseille's City Hall has been dominated by a Green Left coalition that has prioritized sustainable tourism. I often hear fellow residents say the city should learn from the experience of Barcelona, seeing it as a cautionary tale, to avoid over-tourism. Last month, our mayor organized a petition calling for an end to cruise ship pollution. He described the ships as floating cities and argued that they emit as much pollution as a million cars. The campaign has set its sights beyond Marseille, with our mayor insisting it has to be a Mediterranean-wide effort given the levels of air pollution in its coastal cities. This has been yet another summer of prolonged heat waves around the Mediterranean. It has been impossible to ignore the growing number of wildfires or the alarming rise in sea temperature that puts the Mediterranean's rich marine life at risk. In Marseille, locals welcomed the measures taken by city and regional authorities to mitigate the impact of tourism this year. The Calanque restrictions apply to us residents too, but it's a price worth paying to help preserve our little piece of paradise. For World Report, this is Mary Fitzgerald in Marseille.
Well, that's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Elaine Devlin. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/World Report or wherever you get your podcasts. We're back again at the same time next week, but until then, from myself, Justin McCarthy, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.